Queensland's Department of Education recently announced that they would be banning access to artificial intelligence software, including ChatGPT, in public schools across the state. The announcement comes after New South Wales announced similar plans to restrict students' access to ChatGPT, citing concerns the software could be used for cheating on assessments. But why are experts and educators so worried about ChatGPT, and what could it be used for? Matthew Van Wyk asked Dr. Vitimir Kovanovich, a senior lecturer in education futures at the University of South Australia, what ChatGPT actually is.
So it is an online chatting tool that actually allows anybody to access very powerful textual AI models that can provide really kind of question and answer functionality to all kinds of things. And what the system actually does, it just generates the next word, the next probable word in the sequence. But, for example, United States, all probably the next one to predict will be America, right? But actually, if you sequence the word like a question or any form of instruction, actually it will predict the response. So almost like what we are currently using with this question-answer system is almost like a side functionality of a system that was originally intended just to predict the sequence of words, like an autocomplete. Like imagine you're pressing the autocomplete on your phone and every second word, every next word that comes out.
So how might school students use it then?
So basically what the students will do then is they will copy and paste the assignment instructions. And then the system will continue predicting the word, but these words will be actually the answer to the question. Because in the context of what is the most probable answer for this kind of input, well, you know, if you write a question, the system will continue with the response to the question. So you could, the essay was, write the critical differences between pro-abortion versus against abortion views and justify that, If student copies up like assignment like that in the ChatGPT window, the system will continue and write a response using all the data from the internet. And which is really powerful is the text won't be plagiarized from a specific source or anything like that. The system will write the response that actually in most cases is very, very meaningful and very, very good. There have been many systems who, many tests been done with this platform. It was able to pass business school exams in, MBA examinations, medical school examinations, and things like that. So it's very, very powerful.
So how might it then impact students' education? Would it like affect the way they communicate or their critical thinking skills or something like that?
So basically it will undermine the current assessment practices. So the big thing was at the moment there is a big, big chunk of student assessments and grades being given for things the students write. And I mean, obviously, always there was a question of how much parents are helping or, other friends and things like that. But now everybody has next to them a very powerful system that can help them generate the response to, homework assignment. And so that will really impact the quality of our assessment. Now everybody will be able to write on a, maybe not on a, highest possible grade, but on a decent grade. So that's really going to impact, that undermines the whole point of the assessment.
Some universities, especially in the Group of Eight in Australia and elsewhere, including other educational districts in the world, have announced changes to like the academic integrity policies, including, classifying the use of AI in assignments as cheating, as well as possibly moving towards more in-person supervision and pen and paper assessments. Is this enough to address the issues AI might pose in the classroom? And is there anything else that can be done?
So, well, it's a very temporary fix. I mean, in a sense, yes, you can change the policies, that's fine, but the system will be very hard to detect. And it will be a game and, cat and mouse. You will develop a system to detect. There will be another system that will be developed to obscure that. So moving to pen and paper, yeah, sure, you can do that, but that's not really the point. Why would we do that? I see the reason in a short term. Our current assessments are all based on the fact that students will be writing responses to written assignments. And with something like ChatGPT shows up out of nowhere, yeah, and that there is a problem. But in the long term, moving to pen and paper is a horrible idea, and it's actually very counterproductive because they're going to do it in the workplace. Everybody will be using it in the workplace. So what's then the point? While we are they going to be using pen and paper in the workplace? Far less than ChatGPT. So, I mean, it's really not fair to the students to do that. We need to find a way to meaningfully integrate ChatGPT into our assignments and assessments and everything we do. I mean, there is other ways than giving students to write an essay. There are other ways to do an assessment. And I mean, the field of research and assessment, there is other things you can do there.
Dr. Vitimir Kovanovich, Senior Lecturer in Education Futures at the University of South Australia, speaking there with Matthew Van Wyk.
After a hard day out in the paddock, I like to catch up with The Wire. Find out what's going on around this big country.
The Wire, bringing you the stories from all around Australia.
New Zealanders were rocked last week to find out that Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern would be stepping down. Several contenders appear to be in the mix, but Labor appears to be making a seamless transition to former 44-year-old Education Minister Chris Hipkins. I asked Dr. Grant Duncan from Massey University in New Zealand that now that he was about to become Prime Minister, how would Chris Hipkins sell himself to the electorate given the looming elections?
Well, he's quite a different personality from Jacinda Ardern and is, I don't think, going to be any of the kind of international recognition and celebrity that Ardern generated. Nonetheless, if you look back to their maiden speeches in the House, you know, they both entered the House in 2008. And I think, you know, going back to those sort of idealistic moments when a new politician gets a chance to state their values and aspirations, although they use different words, they actually started out, I think, with very similar Labor social democratic values. So in some senses, they come from a very similar kind of place about wanting to have a more compassionate society and so forth, solid social democratic values. So he's hardworking, dependable, and I think politically very pragmatic. So although, like Jacinda Ardern, you know, they both shared those social democratic values, my impression so far is that Hipkins really has got a clear focus on what the Labor Party needs to do to try to be restored to government after the next election.
The Nationals appear to be ahead in the polls at the moment. Mm-hmm. What is this? Why is this happening? Is it because the economy is front and centre in people's minds?
To some extent, leadership or change of leadership in National, some disillusionment among some people with Ardern's leadership and also some policy and economic dissatisfaction among the public.
And what about minor parties? They've had quite a big effect in New Zealand politics in the past, although not so much in the last election, I believe. But are they going to play a bigger part in this election coming up in October?
Oh, definitely, yes. So to some extent, the current electoral race is looking like, you know, two big engines, each with a sidecar, so to speak. So you've got essentially a National ACT party coalition on one side, and the ACT party is more libertarian. On the other, you've got Labor and the Greens. And so those are your two probable main coalitions. We don't know at this stage whether New Zealand First will be successful in making it back into Parliament, but I wouldn't write them off necessarily at this stage.
That's Winston Peters,
right,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think he's been written off so many times and he keeps bouncing back, so yeah. You've really got to be a bit careful with him, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, well put.
Yes. So, you know, he again could be kingmaker if things go his way.
That's possible, yeah.
What do you think about Christopher Luxon? Is he becoming, you know, perhaps a bit more familiar to voters and a bit more attractive now that Jacinda Ardern's no longer in the picture?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But certainly, one of the paradoxical things is that, on the one hand, National was leading Labor in the polls up until the most recent polls in January, but Christopher Luxon wasn't leading in the preferred Prime Minister poll. He was still lagging behind Jacinda Ardern in preferred Prime Minister. Yeah, probably he's not performing for National as well as they would have liked. Certainly, I think he's had plenty of time for New Zealanders to become familiar with him, but just from a sort of anecdotal vox pop point of view, I don't hear people really raving about the guy, put it that way.
And I suppose lastly, with the New Zealand system of elections, what are the big hurdles that have to be overcome by the major parties?
I think we can be fairly confident that neither of the two major parties is going to be able to govern alone like Labor is at the moment. I really don't think that's very likely. So come the election night in New Zealand, often there's a bit of a wait while we see, first of all, what the final results actually are. So that can take 2 weeks till we see the final result, which might make a bit of a change to some seating arrangements. And then there are potentially quite lengthy government formation negotiations while different coalitions seek some kind of arrangement so that they can get the majority in the House. But yeah, on election night, I would imagine we'll probably we won't necessarily have a clear result. And so minor parties, particularly the Māori Party, which will probably get 2 or 3 seats, and possibly New Zealand First, if they can make it over the 5% threshold, may have a role. So I think it's going to be a close race.
Dr. Grant Duncan, Associate Professor of School, People, Environment and Planning at Massey University, and speaking with me there. I'm Roderick Chambers, and you're listening to The Wire, around Australia, on the Community Radio Network.